I really want to improve the culture. I really want to improve the diversity, but I'm going to have quite a hard time convincing the people at the top. What are some selling points that people could take to a business and say, this is why it matters so much?
Kind of bucket them into four major ones. The first is around attraction and retention of talent. Deloitte said 83% of millennials are more actively engaged in work when their employer has DEI initiatives. The next one is around innovation. More voices, more ideas, more innovation result in better decisions and performance. McKinsey that said companies with ethnically diverse executive teams are 36% more likely to outperform on profitability than exec teams that aren't. The third one, which I think really resonates with the revenue generation side of businesses, is around capturing new markets and customers. And then the fourth bucket is around...
Ian, thank you so much for coming onto the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on. You have some very interesting experience that I am dying to get into. But before we dive into today's episode, can you just give the audience a little bit of a background into who you are, where you've come from, and your journey in your career so far? So over to you.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much for having me. Yes, my name is Ian Goshko. I use the pronouns he, him, and I'm joining from Gadigal land in Sydney, Australia. Just pay my respects to the traditional custodians of the land on which I've been able to enjoy for the last 10 years. I'm Canadian. I moved to Australia about 10 years ago, but I'll take you back to the first 10 years of my life because I think it kind of shows how my life shaped to where I am today. So I was born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I've got a Ukrainian sort of background and heritage as well from my grandmother and grandfather. And when I was 10 years old, my parents decided to move the entire family to the Middle East. And in 1993, we moved to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And then we also spent some time in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. And I think that was really where I started getting my, appreciation for culture, appreciation for different backgrounds, languages, and travel during that time. So I think when I trace it back, that's kind of where it started. I came back to Canada, finished up my schooling, university just outside of Toronto, and then started my career in Toronto. And I started in recruiting. So I was an executive search talent for a number of years. And then I moved to Deloitte and did corporate in-house recruiting, experienced higher recruiting. And during that time, we had the global financial crisis. So recruiting took a back burner for a lot of organizations. And that's where I got involved in a lot of different projects with Deloitte Tohmatsu, the global entity. So I was working with doing some succession planning, some secondment programs from different parts of the business to others that I created, did some best practices around global mobility. And those projects kind of lent me to further my career in management consulting and think of actual projects with clients. So I, through my network, ended up getting a role with Accenture in their management consulting practice for talent and organizational performance. So really focusing on change management, HR transformation, stakeholder engagement, and employee experience from beginning to end of life cycle. So I did that for a number of years based out of Toronto, but constantly on the road. That was my full-time job. So traveling nonstop, delivering for clients and loving it. And then my gay job was running the LGBT network at Accenture in Canada for a number of years. I then decided to, I was an expat kid, so I wanted to be an expat adult, and started looking at opportunities, to move overseas. Long story short, Accenture gave me the opportunity to move to Australia. So I spent some time in Perth, and then some time in Sydney, but again, constantly kind of on the road, traveling and delivering for clients. Also led the Accenture LGBT network in Australia, and just had such a passion for that. you know, I struggled coming out when I first graduated university, and then went into my first role. So that was, you know, a struggle that I didn't want a lot of other people to experience. As much as I could help, I wanted to. Fast forward to 2 years ago, I left consulting. I just, you know, it's a highly intense industry and business. So during COVID and all that kind of stuff, had a little bit of realizations, had another career crisis, and decided I don't want to do consulting anymore for the time being. I really want to do diversity, equity, and inclusion full time. I've been loving it. I've been doing it off the side of my desk for so long. How do I bring this front and center on my desk? So left consulting, flipped my CV around to highlight all the amazing things I've been doing in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, and then started getting calls from different companies. And I had a phenomenal opportunity 2 years ago and joined Macquarie Group as the regional head of DEI for Australia and New Zealand. Had an absolutely fantastic time there, worked to deliver the global strategy, couple trainings, stood up some new employee groups at Macquarie Group in Australia. And then about 6 weeks ago or so, I started at Telstra, which is the, you know, largest telecom and technology company in Australia, but with a quite a big global presence as well. So I'm now the global head of DEI at Telstra, and have, you know, just fantastic experience so far, and really loving my career change. But you never know what's next. It kind of keeps evolving every day.
Amazing. You have had quite the career. It's extremely inspiring to hear your story. Before we go in, there's so many questions I want to ask you, so I'm really excited to get stuck in. But what's really interesting, I've come from the UK myself, so I moved out to Australia, 12 years ago now. And growing up, I did a huge amount of travel as well. Went, you know, backpacking through Asia, you know, lived in Europe for a number of years. What I think is really interesting when I've met people that have traveled is you have a different perspective. I think because you meet so many people from different walks of life, different backgrounds, you instantly just start to appreciate different cultures, different opinions, and just different people in general. And it definitely opened my mind to just how incredible people are. And when you just get stuck in your little village or your little town, when you meet the same people, like, you're not getting exposure to just individuals out there. And that's what makes the world go round, right? We don't all want to agree with each other. We want to be different. We want to be individuals. So it's just very interesting that when I meet people that are very passionate about diverse inclusion as I am, they typically have traveled or had some type of experience as well, which is just really interesting. I'm trying to sort of identify the patterns as well when I'm sort of speaking to people. So that was just one thing I wanted to pick out from. But look, what always fascinates me is these huge organizations, right? You go in and you hear about all the red tape, the things you can and can't do. How do you go about creating change in an organization the size of like your Telstras of the world, your Deloittes? Like, these are absolute beasts of companies with thousands of employees. So you've got quite the job ahead of you. But where are you going to begin, Ian? I'm fascinated to know that. What are your strategies going into these big organizations? If you could just indulge me in how you're going to go about that.
Yeah, look, it's a great question because I take a very similar approach to how I took every approach when I started a new client in management consultant, right? So there's always this discovery and analysis phase. You're sitting there understanding what currently exists, what limitations exist, who's who, the underlying culture and behaviors of the organization, you know, just taking that first sort of 30 to 60 to 90 days to just absorb it. And I know a lot of people, when you're in consulting, you can't take that 90 days to absorb it. But when you're actually in a company and you have that time, you do need to take that time and absorb all the unspoken processes and technology and tools and people and relationships that exist. A lot of people have a tendency to jump in really quickly and say, we're going to, you know, I want to do this. I want to make this change really quickly. But you do tend to, you know, stumble and, you know, oh, I forgot to consult with that person. I didn't know that existed. I didn't know that. And it can be damaging to sort of your reputation and your what you're trying to achieve. So just take the time to absorb and do that discovery work. Then you can start moving things around a bit, finding out where your influence lies, finding your allies in the organization who are passionate about DEI just like you are and want to make a difference, and bring them into the fold of what you're trying to do. Understand if, does the organization love targets or metrics? Is that how they're driven? Are they driving the right behaviors? Do we have to have a look at that? I think making it simple is really, really important. So most organizations are getting a lot of messaging, right? The employee gets a ton of messaging every single day. How do we make that succinct and simple for the employee? So in my view, when we're talking about DEI, sustainability should be talking about DEI and how that interrelates. Procurement should be talking about DEI, and DEI should be talking about procurement when we talk about diversity spend. When we're talking about talent, we should be talking to the people with talent and recruiting and all those parts of the business to really bring it all together and keep it nice and simple for the employee. The sort of last thing that I think is really sort of successful when you join a big organization is take the time to meet the organization where it's at. So that discovery phrase of where you sit back and watch, it lets you look at it and say, where on the maturity model is this organization? And meeting them on that journey is really important. Some organizations are very advanced and they're playing around the edges of what they can influence and change. Other organizations are a little bit more earlier in their journey and require some of that governance structure, process, policy to get into place in order to get things running. So key part there is meet the organization where they're at and understand where they're at, because they may not even understand what the definition of equity means, or for that matter, diversity. So define that and say it over and over and over again. They may not know why diversity, equity, and inclusion is important. They may have read multiple articles, or a CEO might have said it's important, but to that leader, it means something different. It's probably, profit, innovation, capturing new markets, being the right thing to do, all those types of things. So you have to understand the organization and understand why it's important to them, and then continue to drive that home with the leaders and employees.
Can we dive into the benefits now? Because, there's a lot of people that are going to be listening to this and going, I really want to improve the culture. I really want to improve the diversity, but I'm going to have quite a hard time convincing the people at the top. So I want this to be as, strategy based as possible for people that really want to impact change in their organization. So what are some, some selling points that people could take to a business and say, this is why it matters so much? Like, what have you seen from, implementing these strategies into big organizations? What are some of the benefits that people can expect to see?
Yeah, great question. Because it does require a bit of understanding the organization and understanding how they operate or how they drive. I think some of the kind of bucket them into four major ones, if I can. But the first is around attraction and retention of talent. So employees are seeking that workplace where they can feel accepted, valued, and can realize their full potential. Deloitte said 83% of millennials are more actively engaged in work when their employer has DEI initiatives and they're seen as doing DEI activities. The data is out there, right? There's tons of things to show that employees are looking for and want organizations to have a DEI strategy or plan and what they're doing. The next one is around innovation, right? More voices, more ideas, more innovation result in better decisions and performance. I think it was McKinsey that said companies with ethnically diverse executive teams are 36% more likely to outperform on profitability than exec teams that aren't. The third one, which I think really resonates with the revenue generation side of business businesses, is around capturing new markets and customers. So revenue growth. DEI is important to shareholders. It's important to clients. It's important to customers. So there's an element of, are we doing the right thing? But then there's the element of, you know, being successful. Harvard said that diverse companies are 70% more likely to capture new markets than organizations who don't actively recruit and support talent from underrepresented groups. 70% more likely to capture talent or markets. That's, I mean, any executive will be like, yeah, tell me how I do this. I want to capture more market. Yeah, I need more market share. No one will ever say things like that. And then similarly for the Diversity Council of Australia, you know, having a diverse team, you're actually more likely, 5 times more likely to produce excellent customer and client service if you have an inclusive and diverse team. So thinking about storefronts or retail, all the way up to a call center to innovation and product design, having that means you're focusing on that customer service and that client interaction. And then the fourth bucket, which I like to usually talk to, depending on the audience, is around demonstrating your social responsibility. So, you know, the commitment to DEI is critical for ongoing acceptance and approval by the communities in which we operate in, but also by the shareholders and stakeholders. So, you know, the standards of which we're holding organizations against has increased over time. Things that were not usual 25 years ago, such as like all male executive boards or executive teams or discriminatory hiring practices, they're gone. And that was just 25 years ago, right? It's kind of not acceptable anymore to have that. And that social pressure and social responsibility is growing. So that's that, making sure that we're socially responsible. We have that license to operate by our clients, by the community, and by our stakeholders, and making sure that we're doing the right thing at the end of the day.
I love it. And I think, God, if anyone's listening to this and needs a reason, just listen to that again and just take it to your HR director or your managing director and just say, just listen to this. This is exactly why we need to focus on this. But look, you're so right. I think it has come such a long way. Like, I started my recruitment career 10 years ago. And when I first started, honestly, Ian, I think I can count on one hand the amount of women I place in technology. So that's an area that I focus on, technology. It's very male dominated, but slowly but surely we are starting to see more women come through. But I guess one of the challenges, which I'd love to go into for you now, is, you know, really setting people up for success, right? So like, what do you foresee some of the challenges being right now and into the future? Because obviously we have come a long way. We still have a long way to go. But what do you think some of the hurdles are going to be for you, maybe in Telstra and just in general, as we move towards a more diverse and inclusive workforce? What are some of the things that we could come up against and how can we prepare?
Yeah. It's a really fascinating question because it keeps changing, right? So it wasn't too recently that, you know, the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter was top of mind, right? And that came at a time when there was some movement in the DEI space, but it wasn't like the most important focus for businesses. So it really sort of lit that fire that I think a lot of organizations needed. But it was already in progress. It was just sort of that additional level of urgency. I'm seeing it already, is that there's a shift. So kind of in the past, people said, okay, DEI, let's focus on all the diversity dimensions. Let's focus on everything. We got to focus on gender. We got to focus on this. We got to focus on that. And it wore people out. It wore the DEI teams out. It wore the employees out. It wore leaders out. So the shift that I'm trying to take leaders and employees on is find the one thing that you are passionate about. And that is your DEI commitment. So if it's LGBTQ+, that's your passion. Stick with it, go for it, and know it well. And be then allies to other groups, but know one really, really well. Or if it's gender equity, think about that as your number one and focus on that. Maybe because, you know, there's a connection with, you know, your mother or your sister or your, you know, kids there, and making sure that that equity is there for people in the future. That's one thing that I'm trying to drive, is that we don't need to boil the ocean. Let's focus on the one thing that you, Georgie, are passionate about, and drive multiple agendas forward, as opposed to spreading ourselves a bit thin. The other piece to it is, there is an interesting voice that's coming up around, well, if you're asking me to bring my full self to work, I actually don't believe in transgender rights, for example. I don't actually believe in this. So I'm going to bring that to work because that's what I believe. You're encouraging me to bring my authentic self. So I bring that to work.
Okay.
That's a massive mm-hmm. challenge, because then you're getting some mm-hmm. Vocal people around that stuff in the workplace. And what that does is it usually simmers down the people who are passionate and believing in DEI, and they just kind of, they walk away from the conversation because they don't really want to engage with that negativity. So we've tried to make a little bit of a shift and say, it's actually bringing your best self to work. Not your full self, your best self to work. So that best self is the one that aligns to the company strategy, aligns to the company values, aligns to the DEI strategy. And if you're living and breathing the behaviors that we value at our organization, you're being your best self. So leave it at the door then, if that's not your best self. Other organizations will think differently and say, well, you can seek excellence elsewhere and go to another company. My mentality is, let's have a really open conversation. Let's do it. But when you're walking that door, you're embracing everybody. You're embracing that inclusion and that diversity of that team to be successful. But happy to have the conversation with anybody that wants to talk about what they're thinking and where they're going. I think those are kind of some of the big challenges that are going to come our way.
Absolutely fantastic. Look, it's really interesting. I actually hadn't thought about that, because look, I get asked a lot as well. So my one thing is women in tech. That's where I want to focus. It's what I know. I feel like I can speak to it. I don't want to speak to everything. I'm not trying to be everything to everybody. I think that's my lane. That's where I want to focus on. It's my background. It's a passion of mine. So I think that's such great advice, because I think companies sometimes can go, we've got to do everything. We've got to think about everyone and everything. And actually that's when the whole organization can get quite exhausted. And the thing I'm sort of noticing as well, Ian, is that I think it's really, really important to educate and train people, because we've all got unconscious bias. We've all got these things that we've been, you know, born and bred with, right? And a lot of it's caught, not taught. It's caught from our parents, caught from the environments that we've grown up in. And maybe we're not even aware that we have these unconscious biases. So how important is it for organizations to provide some kind of training to have open conversations about this? Because I guess what we can't do is all of a sudden start, you know, we're changing this, we're changing that, we're hiring these types of people, and all of a sudden everyone's sort of trying to be mixed into one room with different opinions, different voices. Like, that almost is a recipe for disaster. So how can organizations go about making sure that people are educated, are trained on unconscious bias, you know, the talent teams trained to post, you know good job ads, not just focused on one gender and one person? Like, how important is that piece to get right as well, from that education in a business?
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of research out there that is, some of it's for training and some of it's against training in the DEI space. Okay. It's an interesting dichotomy between the two schools of thought. I think the one common thing between all of that is, it can't just be a one and done training. It can't be a one and done e-learning. You do need to actually design a program around it, so that people can test, they can come back and have a conversation, see what worked, what didn't work. They can live it longer than a 2-hour session, for example. A lot of people will go into a 2-hour session. If you've got, you know, 20 people in that session, let's say 10 of them are probably checking their phones or email. another five are super, super interested, and the other five maybe, you know, oh, that was great, I got a free coffee and a cupcake or something, and now I'm off back to work, right? So I think one and done trainings don't work. It's thinking about the holistic program around it and then saying, okay, well, we're actually going to send a message now, and we're going to nudge people because they went to that training and say, hey, you know, this is a bit of more learning that you can do in this space. Come back and share. We can have sharing circles or yarns around these types of things. That's where we see a lot more of the impact and value being created. Overall, just I think that culture of saying, I don't think you said that right, or did you mean this? So it's not calling out. I don't like calling people out. I like bringing them into the conversation and understanding from them a little bit more and saying, you know, did you actually mean this when you said X, Y, Z? Or, you know, when you're looking at candidates, did, you know, questioning that bias. And that requires someone that is confident and feels empowered, but also has the right knowledge. So I think that's where the training comes in, but it also becomes confidence, empowerment, psychological safety in order to do that. So it's not just DEI training, it's all the other pieces that come into play to really make it, to actualize the value.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. God, it really is quite complex, isn't it? But it doesn't need to be, but it is. There are going to be some things that obviously are going to come up, right? And I don't think anyone's going to get it completely perfect. I think everyone's going to have to go on a bit of a journey with it and just do their best. But I think ultimately it's just beginning. It's just being aware of it. It's just starting. It's just doing something, right? One of our clients, in fact, 7-Eleven, they're doing something really interesting in their business right now. They've created like employee resource groups. So for example, they've got like a group of women in the technology sector that they're sort of bringing together. Are you noticing anything that companies are doing particularly well at the moment from that sort of D&I perspective that you go, look, that's a really good model. What they're doing over there is fantastic. Any sort of examples or case studies that you think that's working really well, that has worked well in your opinion?
The thing that I caution a lot of people around is that there's a external focus of DEI. So did you enter that index? Did you win that award? Did you change your logo to the pride flag during Pride Month? So very external things, which can people start calling out if they're actually tokenistic. So there's the element of doing things well that you and I might observe as a customer of an organization versus what is actually happening inside an organization. I've had many conversations with people and I say, hey, I've heard great things about company X. I've seen this and I've seen that. And that person says, oh, I didn't even know we had an employee resource group that was focused on LGBTQ+. That to me is the biggest opportunity, as opposed to a fail. Biggest opportunity that an organization has is to making sure that their internal message is consistent, and then they match it with their external message. So it's not about capturing the pink dollar, for example, and marketing during Pride Month. It's around, we're doing the right thing internally. We are looking at our talent processes, our talent systems, our unconscious bias, the inequities that are built into everything. That's the biggest impact that a DEI team can have, is actually deconstructing the policies and tools and procedures and systems to say, is this inclusive? And how do we continue that journey? The external side of things, or the employee resource groups, those types of things are very important. But if they're not married up with what you're trying to do internally and the actual value add for the employee, it falls flat. We can only have so many morning teas and cupcakes and drinks after work for an event. Let's talk about are people being treated inequitably, and how do we fix that internally? That's sort of my thinking in terms of, you know, best in class. It's let's stay at home first. Let's think about what's happening at home before we start doing things externally. But they can always be done at the same time.
No, that's really good advice. I think a lot of, you know, companies out there, like you say, you know, they talk a good talk, but are they walking the walk? You know, when you peel back the layers, what are they actually doing? Like, what are the staff saying? What's actually going on in the culture? What in your opinion? So like, there might be somebody listening to this right now, and you know, they might feel like, you know, the company they're working for is having a really good talk, but inside the walls, it is quite toxic. What advice would you have for somebody right now working in a workplace? Maybe they really enjoy their work, but the culture is slightly toxic and they're maybe not happy. Like, what advice would you have for those people listening to this right now that would love to bring about change in the organization, but maybe are feeling a bit stuck and don't know where to begin? Should they leave? Is it, you know, is there certain things that you go, no, they are all red flags, get out? Or is there something that as an individual we can do to create change in organization?
So many factors in that decision and what you can do. I mean, we've all been in that situation, right? It is worth noting, though, that 80% of employees leave their boss. They don't leave the company. So they leave their manager because they're not feeling like they're in a safe space. They don't feel like they're being valued. That manager's not DEI focused or has a passion about that, as opposed to the company. So the company brand could be amazing. The company DEI strategy, their sustainability strategy, you name it, could be amazing. But that person will still leave because it's the people leader. And that really gets to that focus that we talked about before, is around the training, but the confidence and the empowerment that your people leader is supporting you. That people will stay if you've got a strong people leader who's across all of those types of things. I guess the opportunity here is really twofold. One is find out who else is in your boat. So who else are the agitators that want to focus on this? They're allies maybe outside of work and super active in the diversity community. And you can kind of create a little bit of a forum or support. I don't want to say support group. That sounds wrong. A community for yourselves internally to talk about these types of things and be a support group for yourselves and thinking that way. That's one aspect. The other aspect is, finding that there's probably one or two senior leaders that can, that either have a connection to a diversity dimension or are passionate about it, but they may not be exhibiting it at work. So they can help be that ally. And it was actually similar for me when I came out my first job. I found my ally. And then I found extremely comfortable to talk about it and be out and navigate it within the corporate space. I'll leave option four as like leaving the company. That's kind of up to that individual on what they decide. But I think the third option in my mind is balancing that work and life passion don't need to be at the same time. So you can love your work. You can come to work as long as there's no, obviously, discrimination and those are bullying. Come to work, do your work, love your work. And then at the end of the day, you can go volunteer for this foundation, this organization, and that fills your DEI passion that you have. So we don't necessarily need to do it all at once. I think there is a ongoing sentiment within the workforce that they want to have it all at work, but we just know that that's not always possible.
I think, do you know what, it's so important just to have that those allies and those people that have got your back. And you know, I've certainly had them in my career, and I've also not had them as well, and the difference in my confidence in the how empowered I feel and what that actually has meant for me in my career has been huge. So I think that's such great advice of like to find your allies, find the people in the organization that you can trust, that you can speak with, because that can make all the difference. And it can then allow you to bring your best self to work. You know, when you feel like you've got your coworkers, your colleagues, your people, leaders just supporting you and wanting the best for you, I think that's such a incredible feeling. And I know our work doesn't need to be our everything and our career is not our everything, but it's a huge part of what we do. And we do want to be coming to work every day, feeling supported, feeling seen, feeling valued and feeling heard. So I think that's such powerful advice for anyone listening to this right now that isn't feeling supported. Like, you know, like Ian said, you know, there will be people in the business feeling that way, find them. And if not, then you've got some big decisions to make, I guess. But, you know, it is sad to think that people spend majority of their living lives at work, and some of them aren't feeling fulfilled. Some of them aren't feeling safe and secure. Well, you know, I definitely am on a mission to change this. But look, I'd love just to focus on just quickly, like, obviously I've come from that recruitment sense. So I get asked a lot from my clients, Georgie, what can I do to attract great diverse talent into my business? So can you just give a few tips and tricks and things that companies can do and use to attract a good pipeline of diverse talent into their organization? What have you seen that's been working well?
I guess you have to define what type of diversity you want.
Of course. Yes.
Because otherwise you could be chasing something that may not actually exist. I have some really, really good conversations with the other senior leaders around there is a limited supply in the talent pipeline today, right? So, you know, you listen to some organizations that aren't necessarily there yet. They're thinking from a gender perspective, they're still thinking binary, but they're thinking 50-50, right? And I look at what they do and I look at their business and I look at their industry and the skills that they're looking at. And then based on external research and LinkedIn and a bunch of other things, you can say, well, that actually doesn't exist in the market. So if you want to be 50-50, but you're an engineering company, that doesn't exist because you can't create engineering talent across the different genders. So I think the first thing is having a really open, honest conversation with those organizations and saying, yeah, and using data to say, what is the market actually out there? And how do we then get into those communities to talk about what we do? Now, that's the one aspect which is externally focused. I'll come back to the internally focused aspect that I mentioned earlier, is that if you've got a internal systems and community and processes and culture that is accepting of diversity, those people will go find people to come work for you, right? That referral and that network. I mentioned my job at Deloitte, my job at Accenture, and my job at Macquarie was actually through my network. And my job at Telstra, actually. I've known who I report to for a number of years and called me up and said, hey, do you want to come work for us? So using your internal employees as the best advocate for attracting diverse talent is like number one. So they need to know what you're doing from a diversity perspective that needs to marry up with what you're doing internally and externally. And then they become your best advocates. They will go and bring all the diverse talent you want. The second thing, which is, I think, a little bit advanced for a lot of organizations, actually probably for society as a whole, from a corporate perspective, is going back to that talent pipeline. The talent pipeline is small. If you want to increase it, you need to go further down the pipeline. So talking to high schools, talking to universities, maybe even talking to junior high schools in different grades, so that everybody from a diverse background can understand what they wanted, what they could do, right? So at a very young age, we're asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? Chances are you don't even know the 3,000 different things you could be. You've just decided you're going to be one. So getting further down that life cycle of a human, really, and saying, here's what we do in Telstra, here's what we do at 7-Eleven, here's what we do at here. And it really broadens everyone's mind, which then drives forward people making different decisions in university, different schooling, may not even need university, right? You can think about a different type of education to get where you're trying to go. And that then increases the talent pipeline. Now, it may not benefit your client or Telstra that day or that year, but it's kind of a greater mission, if that makes sense. What we find now is that there's a lot of fighting over the same talent, right? We need to hit this target. So we're going to, you know, we need a senior woman. Well, that senior woman moved 18 months ago from another company because that same company was doing the same thing. And it's just not the right way of, I think, approaching attracting diverse talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's also not sustainable either, because like you said, we are all fighting over the same pool. So we do need to look at other strategies. We do need to go, like I say, further down the pipeline. And we do need to educate, you know, young people in schools about what their careers could look like. And I don't think that everybody should be forced into higher education. I think that, you know, companies could have, you know, different programs, apprenticeships, like all these things, internships that they could offer people. And I think that, you know, I would love to see the education system change, full stop, but that's a whole conversation for another day, right? Because I just don't think you need to go to university now, study for 4 years, get in tons of debt to then get out and do a graduate program. I think we need to capture people at a younger age, put them into an organization, and I think they're going to learn far more in the working world and get ahead rather than going to university and still living at home with mom and dad. So personal opinion there, but you know I would love to see the education system change and change quickly, which I'm not sure if it will. But
if I could change every job description to remove university to degree and actually focus on capabilities and skills and all those aspects, I think it just, but it's a DEI is a long-term game, and changing those and getting that mentality and that journey of everybody changing, it is a journey. It's a longer journey, but when it all happens, it actually works out really, really well. So all those programs, all that kind of stuff is all fantastic, and goes without saying, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. In your opinion as well, what do you think? So obviously, like I talk a lot on this podcast about the skills of the future of work, you know, technology, AI, taking jobs. What do you think is going to be a really needed, I guess, human skill of the future? Is it going to be communication? Is it going to be like, what's going to be needed in your opinion in the modern workforce? And how can people make sure that they are future-proofing their careers by upskilling certain maybe softer skills?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't have to look very far to realize that AI still has a long way to go. You know, sometimes there was a case at the moment where a journalist wrote an article, ChatGPT wrote it for them, and they didn't fact check it. So they published, and now there's a ton of pressure and scrutiny on that. I believe a lawsuit against it. So there's still that, at the moment, a human touch in terms of understanding, rereading it, making sure it's correct, and fact checking ultimately. What AI does now, ultimately that fact checking will result in better AI and being able to do that. But the number one skill that I think AI and machine learning will never take away is human empathy. Having that empathy and understanding for where people are in their DEI journey, having empathy for people not understanding certain aspects of DEI or what's next for them, that empathy is what DEI is all about. It's about people. And having that empathy at this stage, there's no AI or robot that's going to take away human empathy. I guess we might see, but that's my skill that I think a lot of people should focus and make sure that they've got down.
I completely agree. That is a very needed skill, especially in the modern day workplace, especially as like nowadays we are working with so many different age groups as well, from different upbringings. And, you know, we constantly are working with people, you know, like who are much older than us, who are much younger than us. And it's just understanding different perspectives and appreciating everyone's opinion. And that can be quite challenging, right? Because you've been taught one way and someone else is coming, but that's what makes the world go round. And that ultimately is what makes a fantastic workplace. When we have got different opinions, different trails of thoughts, we can be innovative, we can move the needle forward. And I think that's the best places to work. So final question, Ian, before I wrap up, but this has been such a enlightening conversation. I know I've learned so much as well, and hence why I wanted to get you on, because I'm still learning about this, you know, and I really want to seek to understand what I can do in my business, help my clients within their businesses. And I think that there's been some fantastic points made in this podcast, but what does success look like for you now in your new role at Telstra? What would you, if I'm sat with you, say in, I don't know, 2 years' time, what would you have loved to have achieved in Telstra? What have you implemented? Where's the company at? I'd love to sort of pick your brain about how you're thinking about what success looks like in this role.
Yeah. Wow. Well, actually, and 6 weeks in to be asked that question too, I'm still doing my discovery and sitting back and watching how everything works.
I feel like you're the sort of person that would have given this some thought. So I'm just going to throw you under the bus for a second and see what comes out. But yeah, I'm curious because I think you've got an amazing job ahead of you, but no doubt a tough job as well. So keen to hear what would success mean for you?
Yeah. So I think I'll probably group it into three aspects. There's probably more, but the vision for us is to be a leader in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. So if someone talks about DEI, they're like, oh, Telstra's got that right. And we've actually got it right inside, not just externally, but internally. So those three things. First one is simplification. Let's just make it simple. Make sure people understand, making sure that message is succinct. And that message is tied to other parts of the business, and such as sustainability, procurement, the talent, the recruitment functions, all those functions. So keep it simple, keep the message consistent. The second one is around alignment. So everything that we do within DEI should be aligned to corporate strategy, should be aligned to social impact, should be aligned. So having that alignment and making sure that it aligns with business strategy is super, super important. Otherwise, it's just another strategy. Everyone's like, oh, DEI, yeah. DEI is doing that. That's great. DEI is doing that. But if it's actually fully aligned and integrated into what you're living and breathing from a values perspective all the way down to store level, then, you know, that's success. It's fully aligned. So simple and aligned. And the last one is, and this is a, you know, potentially something that's unique to Telstra, but there's a significant population at Telstra who live and work outside of Australia. So Telstra being an Australian kind of base of a company, there's so much more that we're doing in other parts of the region, and we need to incorporate that into our DEI planning. So what does that mean for India? What does that mean for Philippines? What does that mean for the office in Paris? It's going to be something very different than what it means here in Sydney. And having that global view and making it globally applicable is going to be that challenge. So in that 2 years, I'm hoping to accomplish all of that and just get the right behaviors in place. The intentions and behaviors result in impact.
Fantastic. Well, we'll have you back on in 2 years' time and we can just make sure that's happened. But listen, that sounds amazing. And I've got no doubt that you won't achieve it. I think that, you know, you've got the experience, you've got the talent, and you understand what needs to get done. And yeah, I'd be really excited to follow your journey and keep me posted on what happens. But thank you so much for your time today. Now, for those that listen to this that want to connect with you and follow your journey, where can I send them? Where do you hang out the most?
Oh, probably LinkedIn, to be honest. Yeah. That'd be the best place. Yeah, I would love to connect with everybody. And thank you so much for having me. Apologies for the lighting challenges during my during the discussion. I just kept following the sun and the light. But anyways, it was really a pleasure speaking with you.
You too, Ian. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. I appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week, and we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.